From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air today, marijuana has been legal in Illinois for nearly 4 years. During that time, people have been spending more and more money on legal marijuana here, upwards of $130 million a month. And that doesn't even count what the state classifies as medical use. Beyond the numbers, you only have to look around, or smell around, to know that marijuana is everywhere. Personally, when the weather's nice, I can smell it wafting from other cars on the road multiple times a week. And you can often smell it on other people around you, in line at the post office, at the convenience store, or even just walking down the street. What effect is this having on our society? Are people becoming more dependent on marijuana? Are more people taking up the drug? And is it leading to bad outcomes, like car crashes? The law that legalized and commercialized marijuana in Illinois also directed that some of the tax money from marijuana be used to try to answer those questions. For help with that, the state turned to the Jane Addams College of Social Work at the University of Illinois Chicago. That's where Dr. James Swartz is a professor. He has a PhD in clinical psychology and specializes in program evaluation and statistical analysis. Swartz is the principal investigator leading a team of researchers on the Illinois Cannabis Project. The group released its latest annual report not long ago, and Professor Swartz joins us now to talk more about it. Welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us. Professor Swartz, are you with us?
Oh, sorry. I had the microphone on mute. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate you having me on. Good to be
glad to have you here. And listeners, you can join us as ever at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What are you seeing out there? What are you experiencing with this? Here's a personal anecdote. I'll share one. I was in New York City recently, not Illinois, but representative, another state with legal marijuana, and you couldn't go a city block without smelling it. People were openly smoking joints, walking down the streets, sitting out in front of buildings like they were workers on a smoke break. It was just everywhere. Are you seeing that here in Illinois? 800-222-9455. I guess I should say, are you smelling that here in Illinois? Let us know. 800-222-9455. All right. Let's talk about who is using marijuana and what we know about them. And maybe we can start with one of the fears that we heard. Maybe this was a straw man that, you know, having legal marijuana in Illinois might make it more accessible or popular among teenagers, even though you are supposed to be 21 to buy. Have we seen that happening here?
Not among 12 to 17 year olds. We tend to divide our data out by age groups for some of our analyses. And of course, you're right. The big concern was that younger youth would be using marijuana more frequently or taking it up more often. And so far, we're not seeing a big effect in that respect, or any effect. There's not really been much change in the initiation of use among 12 to 17 year olds. The group which has the highest initiation rates, the most frequent use, et cetera, are 18 to 25 year olds. That group has seen some increase, but not huge. But not a huge increase to where it's alarming. So some of that was expected, and it hasn't been as prevalent as we might have projected. So far, so good.
What about among adults? Has legal marijuana become more popular among adults?
We have seen an uptick among people who are 26 years or older, so outside of that 18 to 25-year-old group. Initiation is rare after 25 years old, but what we seem to be seeing is that people who have already initiated use and are in that older age group tend to be smoking more often. So they're more likely to report that they used marijuana in the past month or the past year than they had previous to the legislation legalizing marijuana in the state. So we are seeing an uptick among that group. And I would say that's sort of a general finding, that the increases tend in frequency of use, and perhaps the marijuana that you're smelling on your street corners is from people who had already used, but now they're just using more openly and they're using more frequently. That seems to be what we're seeing so far.
So not necessarily people starting for, you know what, I've never tried this. I'm 46 or whatever. I'm going to start now. But it's more that people who've done it in the past, now it's a little more easily available, maybe.
I think that's who is more obviously using out on the streets and openly and so on. So some there is, I don't want to say that there's not been an uptick in initiation of use just across age groups. There has been in Illinois between, if you look at 2019 and 2021, you do see about a 4% increase in terms of overall population in the number of people who are using marijuana. So there's been some increase, but it's not too dramatic.
But the biggest bump is those 18 to 25 year olds.
Those are the most common. So I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
No. That's all right. So you also collect some interesting findings about what the report terms special populations. And I wonder if we could, this is on page 52 for those following along at home, maybe we can take them individually. who is more likely to be consuming marijuana, men or women?
Oh, no contest. Men, much more likely than women to be using marijuana. Using it more and more frequently. So more men, and the men who are using it more frequently than women. No question. Very clear.
What about pregnant women?
Well, that's been an area of concern. We saw, and actually this is not, interestingly, it's not restricted to Illinois, but there has been an increase among pregnant and perinatal women. In Illinois, I believe that increase was about 6% or so. So increase in the number of women who were pregnant, are pregnant or recently pregnant, are now reporting that they've used marijuana during their pregnancy or after, even during the period when they're breastfeeding. So that was one of the areas, I think, that the advisory committee that this report goes to expressed some concern about.
Interesting. Do we know why? I mean, a lot of the report is looking at what the numbers are, not necessarily why, but what do we know about why that might be?
We don't know why. That is a gap. Yeah. That is a great question and a gap in our knowledge that we are trying to address by going back out and doing our own survey this year, because the why question doesn't really get addressed in some of the national data sets that we're looking at. So there's some speculation that pregnant women might be using it because they feel it's safer to use for pain purposes or nausea than, for example, using opioids. And we know that opioid prescriptions have tightened up considerably over the past decade. And so one idea is that they're using it because they perceive that it might be safer to use than opioids, which may or may not be the case. It's definitely not safe to use, though, during pregnancy. So we're trying to get at that question. We hope to have that answered in the report for the coming year.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. We're talking with Professor James Swartz from the University of Illinois Chicago. He's in the School of Social Work there and is principal investigator on the Illinois Cannabis Project, which is a state-funded study into the public health effects of legal marijuana. 800-222-9455 to join our conversation. And let's go to the phones now. Corey is calling from Peoria on line 4. Corey, thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm calling because I just heard briefly the discussion, and I wanted to chime in. I'm actually a cancer survivor and a kidney donor, and I do use medical cannabis. And so I do think that people use cannabis more because of the stress that they're under as far as the economy and what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing, honestly. I mean, I think from my perspective, what I see is cigarettes still being legally able to use out in public. And no one's talking about that smell and that smoke that is very harmful to pregnant women and secondhand smoke users and drinking. I actually DoorDash during the day, and people are DoorDashing alcohol at 9 o'clock in the morning. And so I think the discussion needs to be switched to how cannabis is helping people other than looking for, you know, the negatives that aren't necessarily studied, that still need to be like that we still need to have studies that show what good cannabis can actually do instead of the negatives, because cannabis is not for everyone. It just as it's, and so the people who cannabis is for, they can smoke and use cannabis regularly, daily, while operating a motor vehicle. And that might not be, you know, that's frowned upon, but people smoke cigarettes and are driving, and it gives them more of a buzz than cannabis would, I think.
Okay, well, yeah, so that's interesting, Corey. Thank you so much for calling in, sharing your perspective. I think I'm going to maybe see if we can pull apart two strands there and put a pin in the question of driving and save that for a little later. But Professor Swartz, your report did look at people who do, the majority of cannabis users, it found, do use the drug to manage mental health systems. And these are not people with serious mental illness, although that's in the report too. But can you talk about that finding, that people are just sort of self-medicating, if you will?
Yeah, you know, Corey raises some very valid points, and he's not alone in that concern that there's too much of an emphasis on the negative consequences of cannabis use, marijuana use. And we heard that in comments from the first year that we presented this report back in 2021. There were some members of the advisory committee that expressed exactly the same sentiments. Marijuana has beneficial effects. Why don't you cover those more? And we did make a conscious effort then to look at what you just described, Brian, the why are people, to get at this, why are people using? Now, aside from legalizing what's called recreational cannabis, where you don't have to have any reason to walk into a dispensary and say, I'd like some edibles or some flower. Illinois also has a medical cannabis patient program where persons with various conditions, medical conditions that qualify, can get a card, and they can then go purchase cannabis at the dispensary for the purposes of treating this condition. In that particular program, and Corey didn't mention this, but perhaps I think he indicated he's been suffering from cancer, and chronic pain is one of the main reasons people in the medical cannabis program will say that they're using their cannabis. If you ask people in recreational cannabis, who use recreational cannabis, he's exactly right, and you're exactly right, Brian. The report and our data showed that people are saying that they're using it for anxiety, depression, and the third one was, interestingly, for trauma, that they had experienced some trauma and they were using cannabis to alleviate the effects of their exposure to trauma. So he is right that it is perhaps we need to think about our relative emphasis in the report and elsewhere about the beneficial effects of cannabis.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so I think it was 60%. So basically, six out of every 10 people who use it, and this is not the medical program, this is just
That's
recreational
right.
cannabis, say it's for these mental health systems. You also found a link, though, for, I thought this was interesting as well, people with serious mental illness, people who have had in the past year a serious mental illness, had much higher rates of cannabis use in general and frequent cannabis use, right, compared to people without a mental illness.
Yeah, that's correct. That particular statistic comes from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, and yes, that's true. And it's sort of a general find. I've been studying substance use, not just cannabis, for many years, and people with serious mental illnesses have high rates of substance use across the board, not just cannabis. But it's certainly true that they use cannabis and use it more frequently compared to someone who doesn't have a serious mental illness. And by that, what we mean typically is schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and major depression are the three big ones, or borderline personality disorder.
Yeah.
But it can be anybody with severe mental illness.
But we need correct. to take Yeah, we need to take a break in about a minute here, but quickly before we do, I did want to touch on one other thing the report looks at, which is this idea of psychosis. We have heard a lot about that. There were a number of high-profile news stories. What did the report find about this idea of cannabis-related psychosis? Is there evidence for that?
Well, that's a hard to do in 1 minute, but we couldn't specifically, since we don't do our own surveys, we couldn't ask that question. We couldn't track people over time to see if you use cannabis at a younger age, do you then go on to develop psychosis? Does that induce the development of a psychotic disorder such as schizophrenia? The evidence seems to be that, and I'm summarizing from some of the review research that we looked at. The
briefly.
Evidence at present seems to be that if you use cannabis early on and you're already prone towards developing a psychotic disorder such as schizophrenia, that cannabis can hasten and bring onset of that disorder more quickly and make the symptoms of that disorder more severe. That seems to be the most solid evidence right now.
Interesting. All right, we're going to continue with Professor James Swartz from the Illinois Cannabis Project. This is the 21st Show, 800-222-9455. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking with Professor James Swartz from the University of Illinois Chicago. He's in the Jane Addams School of Social Work there and is principal investigator on a team of researchers in the Illinois Cannabis Project, which is a state-funded study into the public health effects of legal marijuana here. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. All right. So one of the things that one of our callers mentioned before the break is this idea of traffic. And I think what he was getting at is, sort of questioning the idea that cannabis contributes to accidents or traffic crashes. What have we seen with regard to traffic fatalities since legalization?
So far, I would probably disagree with that assertion that of Corey, I believe was the caller's name. What we're seeing so far in Illinois, and I think nationally as well, is that a higher proportion of traffic fatalities and where there has been testing of the drivers in those fatalities, that a higher proportion are showing up with cannabis, testing positive for cannabis after the fatality. So it does seem that cannabis is contributing to an increasing proportion of traffic fatalities with increasing legalization. The more people are driving while they're using or have recently used cannabis prior to driving. I will say there's one provision that these people also often test positive for other drugs as well. So it's not uncommon to find that particularly things like ecstasy or some benzodiazepine or sedative like Valium, they also test positive for that. So it's a little hard to tease out how much is cannabis contributing to that versus the combination, using cannabis in combination with other drugs is what's really driving this. And so we don't know that yet. We don't have enough data. But clearly a higher proportion of traffic fatalities, persons are testing positive for cannabis.
You know, it's interesting because, I mentioned my bias. I smell this from other cars, and that does make me nervous. So that's sort of my perspective coming at this. I worry about other drivers being impaired. I see these billboards. Seemingly, the government thinks it needs to convince people that high driving is impaired driving because billboards are trying to make that point, which suggests to me that a lot of people may not think that's the case, as our caller indicated. But then on the other hand, to be fair, I wonder, how do you disentangle the pandemic? Because one of the things in the report is that fewer people are being tested. These numbers are a little bit older. I know we know that I'm just going to add some more complications potentially. We know that more young people are using marijuana, as we talked about, and maybe they were the ones going to their essential jobs, whereas your more established, older, you know, university professors and public radio hosts were staying home or working from home during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So how do you disentangle that?
I think only with time. Those are great, valid points. And I think that's sort of a general concern about all of these data, because the Illinois law happened to take effect, you know, January 1st, 2020. And then 3 months later, we were into the COVID epidemic. So some of the things we're seeing, it's a little hard, including, for example, traffic fatalities, as you mentioned, are hard to disentangle. And so everything is rather provisional at this point. And some people even argue, researchers that have studied other states like Colorado and California have argued that, you know, it really takes a full 2 years before you start seeing the effects of legalization. And so I think we've passed that point now, but we did have the COVID epidemic to contend with. So very valid points. I think the only way we can disentangle it is to have more time pass and see if some of these trends continue over time.
Let's go back to the phones at 800-222-9455. Dean is calling from Danville on line 4. Dean, thank you for calling in.
Hey, good afternoon there. I don't know. How y'all doing today?
We're doing well, Dean. How are you doing?
Well, man, I'm not just an old man trying to grow up and be cool as some of you guys, you know.
All right. So I understand you used to smoke in your 20s, marijuana?
Yes. I'm only 71 now.
Okay.
And my opinion is, you know, like they should have legalized a long time ago, you know. And like Illinois, the farmers in Illinois, it would be a nice cash crop.
Mm-hmm. Cash crop for people in Illinois. Like, yeah.
The average guy gets busted with about $20 a sack of marijuana. He gets sent to prison. You know what it costs the state to house him?
A lot more than $20.
Yeah, man. So like, you know, you do account on all the people going to prison for little small amounts of herb, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I always called it. I always called it herb.
Sure.
Because,
all right,
like,
Dean. Well, thank you. Yeah, thanks for the call, Dean. Let me ask our guest to respond to that. And I know you did look at the criminal justice aspect of this and how police arrests for marijuana violations have changed over time. Can you talk about your findings there?
Yeah, there's been a, Brian, if I may just very quickly, I think the history of why cannabis is illegal and why it's a Schedule I drug is very fascinating, and it's worth looking into. It's included in the DEA classification as having no medicinal benefits at all, and being extremely harmful, as harmful as heroin. And that probably needs to change, which is why it remains in that classification, and it's still a federal offense. Although now we're at the point where 38 states, including Illinois, have legalized cannabis in either recreational or medicinal or both. And in Illinois, we've seen very quickly one of the more dramatic drops in effects has been in the arrests for cannabis possession. They've gone down dramatically. I think there's still about 2,000 or 3,000 arrests around the state, I believe. And we didn't drill down into the specific charges, although they're all violations of the Cannabis Control Act. And probably what people are being arrested for now in most cases is trafficking or possessing large amounts of cannabis. But it's been, I think, one of the intents of legalization was to kind of reverse all the bad effects of the war on drugs, and exactly kind of what the caller I think was getting at, of criminalizing this drug and the bad effects that has on people, because they get arrested, into the criminal justice system, employment gets more difficult, etc. And we've seen a strong, clear reversal of that in terms of arrests and in terms of incarcerations. It was only like 100 people incarcerated in Illinois prisons at the end of 2022 when we looked at the data. And so it's been a pretty dramatic effect of the of the Cannabis Legalization Act in Illinois.
Yeah, I try not to do, and we've done, I think, well at not boring the listeners or blindsiding them with too many numbers, but they are striking in this case. In 2015, more than 45,000 arrests for violations of the Cannabis Control Act, 45,000 in 2015. In 2021, so just 6 years later, but after legalization, less than 3,000. So that is a huge drop. Although the fact that arrests are still happening, that does point to the fact, and you looked at this as well, the illicit market remains strong. And a lot of people, different depending on the demographic, but a lot of people are still turning to that illegal market to obtain their cannabis, right?
That's correct. We were interested. Actually, we got interested in that. We were interested in generally, but the Tribune did a nice story a couple of years back. Their angle on this was that the arrests in Chicago were occurring in places where there weren't dispensaries. And so we took another look at that again. We updated that information and found that that's still the case. And that suggests that one reason that people turn to the illegal market is that it's just more convenient for them. They don't have a dispensary near where they live. And unfortunately, at least that's true in Chicago, the lack of dispensaries happens to be in neighborhoods that are primarily ethnic minorities and poorer neighborhoods. So that's still a concerning issue. And one of the criticisms of Illinois' tax act, the Cannabis Tax Act, is that the taxes are so high that cannabis is more expensive to get in a dispensary, even if you have one convenient to you. And so it's actually just cheaper to go and buy it from your local dealer who you may have been buying it from for years. And so we found that those are several of the reasons that people continue to buy illegally: convenience, price, and having a trusted dealer that they've used for a long time.
Is there a difference in, I mean, do we know if there's a difference in like potency or quality or safety between street and store-bought marijuana?
Well, if you poll people about it, they'll say that the quality, they don't make those distinctions, although they feel, if you ask people about it, they don't make those distinctions. They'll just say that they feel that it's safer to use to purchase the cannabis from the dispensary. And this would obviously be people, but these would be people who purchase it from the dispensary. I don't really have a good answer to that. I haven't seen comparisons of the THC, THC being the primary psychoactive substance in cannabis. I haven't seen data on the THC concentration in dispensary products versus products sold on the street.
Interesting. All right. We are speaking with Professor James Swartz from the University of Illinois Chicago, who is the principal investigator on the Illinois Cannabis Project, which is a state-funded study into the public health effects of legal marijuana. Let's go back to the phones. And Dory has been waiting patiently on line two from DeKalb. Dory, thank you for waiting. And I understand you want to talk about your husband who used cannabis during chemotherapy.
Yes. And I wanted to preface it also with many of the people, many of the smells that you smell are, please just don't assume that they're just people having a good time. People would have normally just been, you know, having a drink. I was hoping that you could understand that many of the diagnoses that are that can get a medical card for medical cannabis are people that will take a long time to find a doctor. In DeKalb, we couldn't find anyone. My husband was had mesothelioma for many years, and they didn't know that. And when they finally found a cancer, it was too late for him. It had already been years through his system, the asbestos from the railroad where he worked. And that was legal at the time. That asbestos was illegal at the time that they had him using it. And so he lost so much weight, he couldn't get chemo. And so the marijuana helped him gain enough weight so that he got a whole extra year. He was dying, and he put on enough weight, enough spunk to be able to stand up and walk and go to chemo and ride in the car with me and get there and have the chemo. And I would like to say that for medical cards, there wasn't anyone, and there may not be anyone, there probably isn't anyone now in detail who is a doctor who would give any of the people who could qualify for the many reasons why people qualify for medical marijuana. And mm-hmm. also, I would hope that that you would compare some of the drunk driving deaths and accidents, those statistics, with how many possibly I'm seeing less serious, less fatal accidents from people that are using the cannabis instead of drinking, instead of getting drunk out of your mind. And
yeah.
You know,
all right. Well, Dory, I'm sorry to cut you off. Our time is short, and thank you so much for calling in. And I'm very sorry about the experience that you and your husband went through. And I do thank you for sharing your story with us. Professor Schwartz, just a couple of minutes left in our time together. I don't know if you want to respond to anything that Dory had to say there about the medical program and access to that. I don't know what your report looked at that.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to, the accessibility of medical cannabis. That's not something we've generally looked at. And actually, she piqued my interest about where is this available and where isn't it. And I think that might be something we need to take a look at in our next report. I will say that, my heart goes out to her, obviously, there do appear to be valid medical reasons that people can use cannabis to alleviate, as the very first caller pointed out as well. One of the repercussions of having cannabis as a Schedule I drug for all these years has meant that it's very difficult to research that. It's very difficult to get funding from the federal government to do research into what is cannabis useful for, where is it really helpful. And I hope that in the years to come, we'll be able to do more of that investigative work. There's certainly an effort underway at University of Illinois Chicago in the Drug Policy Institute, in the Data Policy Institute, I think it is, to start doing research like that so that people like Corey's husband can get access to cannabis sooner for the conditions where it would be helpful.
This is only about 30 seconds left. What are some of the big, or maybe pick one big question that you really want to get an answer to that you just haven't been able to nail down so far?
Well, we've kind of hit on it, and that is the reasons behind why pregnant women are using cannabis more frequently than they were. That's where we're kind of setting our sights. That's one big study we're doing this coming year, as I already mentioned, and trying to get at some of the whys, more about like some of the questions you raised too, Brian, about why people are using it for different reasons and where is it helpful, and actually things like your caller raised about accessibility.
Fascinating. James Schwartz is a professor at the Jane Addams College of Social Work at the University of Illinois Chicago. He's principal investigator on the Illinois Cannabis Project. Professor Schwartz, thanks so much for being with us and sharing your work with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us.